there anybody want to ask a question or comment to our panelists? Yes, sir. You are at the back.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Dr. Qureshi from Pakistan. First of all, I wish to thank the panel. And also would like to be the icebreaker so that others could take over. It's not exactly related to what we have been hearing since morning. It's something which touches base to all the things that we have discussed, be they demand-driven, be they crowdsourcing instead of outsourcing, because the wisdom of crowd is, of course, much better, and several other things. What I'm just would like to have opinion from the speakers is that we spoke about knowledge economy for quite some time, and of course, there are no two opinions that the knowledge diffusion that has taken place in so many different countries and far-flung areas, especially Africa and especially Asia and many others, where today the internet and the telephony has really played a significant role in trying to build up those countries. But how do we really evaluate knowledge management in terms of, I wish to hear something on this, that with all these so many things going on with reference to the knowledge economy, how do you see the future of knowledge management with reference to cyber security and cyber problems and other things? Thank you.
Thank you. And then you have floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to thank panelists for very interesting presentations and information that they have shared with us today. I am the representative of Costa Rica to the WTO, and I was a negotiator in 1987, 1988, so I'm glad, and I feel that I have a lot of more elements to preach while you're preaching to one of the preachers. I have one question, and this goes to Mr. Mayor Ewert, who indicated in his very interesting presentation that one of the challenges of outsourcing is that it may limit the ability to deliver innovation. The destination or country to which manufacturer is moved may have a different perspective. Costa Rica has been, a successful FDI host. Production, research, and development being done in Costa Rica has boosted innovation capacity there. It has become the most effective way of transferring technology, of receiving technology in our case, that has benefited local educational institutions, local industries, our professionals. And this applies not just to information and communication technology, but to all the areas in which we have received foreign direct investment, as aero industry and aerospace industries. Local industries, for instance, in the development of the latest generation of microchips, airplanes, operating software, or the plasma engine for the International Space Station, has been described as crucial steps for the innovation capacity of thousands of Costa Rican engineers that have been part of it. What would be your follow-up comments on what you said for the country hosting FDI in this fact, if these facts are taken into account, and other information that I'm sure that you know? Thank you.
Thank you. I think there's a panelist. Is there any panelist want to answer the first question? Yeah.
Mr. Sure. I'd like to address at least some of the second question, and it may capture some of the knowledge management question from Pakistan before. I'm going to say something that could be to be provocative and then explain myself. Outsourcing isn't strategic. By that I mean that companies don't outsource the things that give them a competitive advantage. The innovation is something that's very difficult for people to outsource, meaning once you're outsourcing, you're putting things into a common repository of knowledge that can benefit you and that can benefit your competitors as well. Innovation is something that you want to do in a way that's different or better than your competitors, and it tends to be a thing that you don't want to outsource. You know, the people who are, I mean, the comments about outsourcing potentially being a blocker to innovation were made specifically around manufacturing. And I think that that's probably the best example of where that's really the case. If you take the major Chinese high-tech outsourced manufacturers, you know, they apply their knowledge indifferently to all companies for whom they are an outsource provider. So HP, IBM, others do outsourcing for customers as well, take on their IT departments. But unless our customers are being very strange, they're not outsourcing to us the things that they depend on to have a strategic advantage and win in the market. They're outsourcing things to us to get a lower cost, and that's really it. The question, the strategic question, isn't how do you get a lower cost. It's what you're going to do with that money that you're saving. You know, how are you going to invest that so that you do something that's different or better than your competitors do? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Can I give a speaker to Mr. Fredrickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question from Pakistan. And I just want to perhaps reconfirm the importance there of addressing this dimension of the legal and regulatory framework. It was mentioned that that electronic commerce in developing countries has actually been, not in all, but in many countries, fairly slow to be taken up by enterprises and consumers. And this, to some extent, this has been related to the lack of adequate infrastructure, of internet, few internet users, and so on and so forth. But it's also been related to an absence of a legal framework that makes consumers and businesses trust the available networks. And we, for instance, at ANCTA, we collect information about how enterprises are using different kinds of ICTs. And if you go to many developing countries, it's still the case that most enterprises, especially the smaller ones that are using the internet, they mainly use the internet to send and receive emails. While that is very useful, it is far from realizing the full potential productivity improvements that could be achieved with a more productive use of the internet. Another thing is, while electronic commerce has been slow to be taken up, we see that where mobile is spreading very rapidly, mobile commerce and especially mobile money use is growing very, very fast. And this is happening, as I mentioned before, very often in African countries, which in ways that have not happened in the developed world. So in many cases, these countries, like in East Africa, are forced to pioneer new legislation in an area where there are few other peers to turn to for advice. Typically, the OECD hasn't got much to offer in this particular field because mobile money systems are not very much used in the developed countries. And And this may be, you know, raising question of what happens if things go wrong, if the money is not delivered the way it should, who is responsible? Can I get them back somehow? Mobile money is tricky because it goes at the interface between financial regulations and communication regulations. So which regulatory area should dominate here? How do we protect the consumers? And who can issue virtual money? And so on and so forth. It raises a host of issues that we are looking at right now. And the challenge there is to provide adequate support to these governments that are not only you know, breaking new ground in this area, they also need to involve many different stakeholders, in even in their own administration, to get this to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I invite Mr. Mayor to answer the question from the Costa Rica.
Thank you, Chair. Let me add to what Mr. Fitzgerald has said. In October last year, there was a column on the Financial Times titled "Why You Can Have an Economy Where People Don't Sweat," and it was exhortation of outsourcing and offshoring, and it represents a sort of viewpoint that is rather endemic, that essentially the production process in many cases, particularly in IT, is basically a succession of services that you can source from wherever you want to have them sourced, and that of course has the positive effects of cost savings, etc., and making a lean company. The comment that I made and the cautious note that I wanted to bring onto the table is that it depends very much on the kind of product that you have and the kind of process that you are engaged in, whether or not you can do that without detrimental effect on your firm's ability to innovate. And it's true that in the manufacturing sector in particular, and that's at least where there's some research that shows that outsourcing the manufacturing process from the firm's point of view that is engaged in this process can actually in the long term reduce your ability to innovate. Now, your question implies that the innovation that takes place at the outsourcing destination is a zero-sum game with the innovation that may be reduced at the place where the original company outsources from. That was not what I'm suggesting. I don't think there's a limited amount of innovation, and if it moves to one place, then it stops at one place. But the cautious note is really to carefully evaluate business models which are based on extensive outsourcing and whether the manufacturing processes or the processes in which these companies are engaged in are actually lend themselves to do that without long-term negative effects. On the destination point, I'm fully agree with your experiences and with the point of view, and I tried to maybe highlight this in the context of Malaysia, where the outsourcing destination creates this kind of industrial commons that Mr. Fitzgerald also mentions, which is extremely fertile for innovation and creates a competing outsourcing sector that services all these outsourcing needs and therefore becomes in itself an industry that is specialized, that fosters innovation and contributes to an individual independent body of knowledge that gets developed by these outsourcing decisions. I hope that clarifies a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.